Traveling opens the mind and heart to different cultural experiences. You can see history before your eyes when touring the Colosseum in Rome, and equally, you can also witness the economic turmoil in a country like Argentina. What's more, in this day and age of social media, you can sit at your desk or in the comfort of your bed and fill your time with nostalgia and escapism by visiting Instagram and YouTube. Shake it out and light a cigarette. I'll miss me when I hear you. Recently, I came across a YouTube channel called Sailing La Vagabond, where a young Australian couple is circumnavigating the deep blue sea and documenting all of their excursions. While this couple, whose names are Elena and Riley, are quite young, they speak with such maturity.
I like to think that we're better role models than the Kardashians.
Do you know how to do your own laundry?
No.
And I think it's important to surround yourself in real life and on social media with people who encourage you to do better and be the best version of yourself. Like, I recently just did a huge cull across my social media platforms.
Elaine has gone into inspiration mode.
Maybe I have.
Push the button.
So if you feel this way about us or other creators, I really encourage you to support them rather than buying the 8 seasons, or I don't even know how many seasons there are, of the Kardashians.
Well, I get a few emails from people apologising, saying like, oh, you know, I'd love to help support, but I can't afford it, or some of them are little kids. That's really not who this is aimed at or what this is about at all.
In this episode, we hear from millennial founder and CEO Lyman Savvy of 321 Ignition. Her travels have taken her to 30 different countries, and through her eyes, she sees that mobile devices are shaping consumer behavior. In the United States, there are 250 million smartphone users, and so it's easy to infer that their first encounter with your business is through their mobile device. Throughout Lyman's travels and surveying different walks of life, she contends that you will never go wrong by putting your customers first, and it starts with their mobile experience. It should be noted that what underlies the idea of a mobile experience to millennials is that they do not have a fear of failure. They do not fear posting a bad picture or a video that may not be flattering about them. What their biggest fear is, the fear of missing out. Stay tuned for this entertaining episode with Miss Lyman Savvy. Before we get to today's episode, let me share with you a listener car buying story. Peter from Pomona, California was in the market to buy a car, and he was going to do so on his first visit to the retailer. The preferred car of choice for Peter was a Toyota Prius. After test driving the car, Peter was ready to make a deal on the car. He sat down at the desk of the sales professional, and both proceeded to negotiate on the best deal. The MSRP of the Prius was $32,000, and after tax and DMV fees, the total out the door was around $35,000. After going back and forth several times, the final offer from the retailer was $30,000 plus tax and fees, which would mean a total out the door of approximately $32,500. This was not going to work for Peter. Peter wanted to be at $30,000 on the button and was willing to pay cash in order to get what he wants. There is a myth in the car business that buying cash usually gets you a better price than financing, and a myth is all that is. Once both the sales professional and Peter realized there was no way of getting to Peter's desired number, Peter's face turned from tough negotiator to a drowning victim in need of a life raft. Peter fully admitted that he doesn't have the time to look at more cars, and he has a job to get to the next day, and he has the money on him now to make a deal today. As the sales professional pried a bit more, it turns out that Peter was involved in a car accident, and the insurance company awarded him $30,000 in damages. Stay tuned for the end of this episode to hear how Peter not only drove away in the Toyota Prius of his choice that same day, but he also pocketed $10,000. Yes, you heard that right. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitate, willkommen, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. This is the automotive podcast that we're giving you university education. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco, and I'm alongside my good friend, transportation correspondent, Forbes.com contributor, Muni Bond attorney, Mr. Rudy Salo. Rudy.
Good morning.
Rudy, my morning was excellent. Do you know why my morning was excellent, sir?
I know why, but I'm going to let you say why.
So, staying at the Dara Hotel, had the chance to have my morning coffee delivered to me by a robot.
It's phenomenal. You know, Dennis, as a science fiction junkie.
I know. This is why I think you love it.
I do love it. I do love robots. In fact, every time I see robots, I take videos of them. As you know, one of my favorite books, The Raffle by Randy Smith, robots are embedded into our society, and we're starting to see it happen today. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Two questions. Did you tip the robot?
Did not tip the robot, but there is a fee for the robot, which did make me question, is assessing a fee for a delivery robot a relevant thing to do?
It's an interesting question. I think this is going to be a question that people will be asking going forward. It's like, hey, you already replaced the human. Why am I paying for you? They would argue back, well, somebody's got to maintain that robot. But you would say, knowing you, would be like, well, why is that passed on to me? Isn't that the cost of the robot?
That's right. Business to business, right? Business to consumer.
AI, robots, our world is going to be changing. We're going to be having a lot more of these conversations. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Did the coffee taste any different, any better? I'm just curious how that coffee was coffee delivered by a robot was. Was there a noticeable difference?
Well, first off, yes, there was a difference, but I don't think that was the result of the robot. I think that was just the result of that. It was just better coffee.
Okay, fair enough. So, one final question.
Yes.
Did you say thank you to the robot?
I'm not going to lie. I think my heart kind of broke when the robot went away because I'm like, this is such a pleasant experience. I didn't want to say thank you. I felt like that would have ended this very romantic interaction that we just had.
Robots are cute, I have to admit.
They are cute. Well, robots are changing, Rudy, the digital retailing landscape. There's no doubt about that. It's going to be happening. And so that makes it very appropriate to what we're going to be talking about today in terms of digital retailing. Men, women, and children, I'm pleased to welcome to the show the CEO and founder of 321 Ignition, a digital marketing agency. And she's also a proud Husky from the University of Washington. Please welcome to the show, Miss Limon Savvy.
Limon Savvy. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to properly pronounce her name. I always mess it up. Limon Savvy,
Rudy,
please welcome to the show.
Probably not. Pronunciation is one of my weak points. How's it spelled?
It's L-Y-A-M-E-N.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, that's the
Limon?
The English of, no, Limon.
Limon.
But in a Russian version, it's Laman. But nobody can pronounce
Laman.
That. Yes.
What does it mean? Is there a meaning behind it?
Well, in Turkey, it's actually a very, very common and popular name. In America, it doesn't mean anything. I don't know what it means actually there, but it's very common. I was just in Istanbul last year, and every time I would meet somebody, they would ask me like, oh, my niece's name or my sister's name or my grandma's name. Everybody's name is Laman, so it's a very, very common name there.
That's great. Dennis and I need to take name pronunciation lessons is what we need to do. We need to start a class.
I was really hoping that once the mic turned on, I would like properly pronounce it, but I still screwed up.
So the mic's not going to fix your problems, pal.
So, Laman, where else have you actually traveled? So you've been to Istanbul.
Yeah.
Where else?
I've been to like 30 countries, Amsterdam, all over Italy, all over France, Spain, obviously Russia, Moscow, Azerbaijan, a lot of places. I'm actually forgetting half of them.
What's the most memorable place you've been to? And for either good or bad reasons?
Well, my favorite place of all time is Saint-Tropez, French Riviera.
Oh.
It is the best.
Why?
It's just the vibe in there, the people you get. It's just, I remember one of my favorite memories, we're sitting at a bar called La Opera, and it's like, I think 1 o'clock in the morning, and everybody's fashionable and everybody's having fun, but the best part is they have their kids with them. But it was like clean fun, you know, like the music they're playing, it's not like hip hop or, you know, they're cursing or anything. It was just like, it was fun and people are on tables and, but it's just like so European thing to do.
My wife's favorite place in the world is Santorini. And one of the reasons why she said Santorini was one of her favorites is because in the middle of the night, the parents were still hanging out with the young kids and it was clean fun and everyone was having fun. I just, there's no place like that in the United States. And I just don't think it's possible. I don't know. Maybe it's the way we raise our children. I mean, the constant sleep deprivation. I have no idea what the Europeans are doing, but they seem to be doing something right.
Well, in America, we're a little bit more strict. Like kids can't drink until they're 21. They can't drive. I mean, in Russia, remember where I left Russia when I was 9 years old. And, you know, everybody back then used to smoke. So my mom would give us mine and say, go buy me cigarettes. And here, you can't go buy cigarettes in the age.
You are your own, you are your mother's robot. It's really how that worked out. I get it.
Did she tip you?
No, I don't think so. She's like, put a roof over your head. There's your tip.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess of all these places that you've been to now also, you have a background in the retail space as well, do you not?
Well, I worked for Microsoft and I was in charge of Office 365.
Okay.
But it was...
I'm a user, by the way.
Oh, you are. Yes. I love Office 365.
Me too. A huge fan. In fact, I mean, seriously, no joke. Like a lot of what I've been able to accomplish is because of Office 365 and how you can go from machine to machine to tablet to phone.
Yep.
It's a great product.
All the
product.
Apps are integrated with each other. Yeah. Everything is in the cloud. I love it. Like, even if I'm flying in a plane, if the internet breaks down or whatever happens to the Wi-Fi, I could still actually be productive on my Outlooks and emails. They might not go out until I land, but the thing is, like, I'm still productive. And to me, you know, time is so precious, so valuable. So I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but to answer your question, so Office 365 is a retail product, but I was in charge of their direct business, which means how do we get people to make purchase Office 365 directly online?
Okay.
As you guys probably know, most of Microsoft sales comes from partner channel, but I was responsible for the direct channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how I'm connect me now to the point where you've joined the automotive industry.
Yes. So this actually came by pure accident.
Okay.
But I believe everything happens for a reason. So one of my friends who I actually used to travel around the world with, you probably saw pictures, was traveling in Istanbul and London and everything. So she's been in automotive since she was 17 years old. And she works for a used car dealership. It's like second largest used car dealership in Washington State. And her and I would go out for little power walks after work. And, you know, we would just talk about our day and how, you know, things that happened to us, you know, people management, all that stuff. And so she actually got promoted to become a COO of the dealership. But she used to be a finance manager, but she's been there since she was 17 years old. And she's really good. Like, she would break records. Like, she would close the most amount of deals. And she was telling me how she was having a hard time finding her replacement. And I'm like, why are you having such a hard time finding your replacement? Like, how hard can it be to do car financing? And she was telling me how it's all about the relationships. Like, you have to have relationships with banks, with credit unions, because even if a consumer comes in and they found the car they want, but if you can't get them approved for the loan, then it doesn't matter. They're not going to buy the car. And so I'm like, well, how hard is it to find a bank to get them pre-approved? And so she asked me to come in one day to her dealership just to spend some time with her. And first, just evaluate what they're doing for marketing, because I've been doing marketing since I was 21. And I've always worked, you know, for huge companies like Microsoft, Capital One, you know, ShareBuilder, which became Capital One. And also a lot of tech startup companies like House Values, which was the first one to start generating leads for real estate agents. Then it went IPO, it got acquired by Trulia, then it got acquired by Zillow. So I've been always like in the tech world, but I've also finance, you know, retail, all over the place. So she asked me to come into her dealership just to see what they're doing, because she's like, we're doing great, we're growing, but could we be doing things better? Can you come in and just give me your opinion? So I came in on a Saturday, I spent, I think, maybe like 4 hours that day with her. And I was looking at everything they're doing, and I'm like, wow, this is really outdated. Why are you guys doing the things you're doing? It was just shocking to me how outdated it was. Like, literally, I'm not going to name the victims, but the products they were using, if she wanted to find a bank to get somebody pre-approved, she would literally have to click on a link, which gives her like, here's 80 credit unions, 80 banks in Washington State. And I'm like, okay, so how do you find out what interest rates are offering? She would have to click on each link specifically, and a PDF file would spit out, and it would say, if somebody has this credit score, if they're buying a car for this range or that payment, here's what the interest rates will be. And I'm like, so you have to do this 80 times? Clearly, she's not gonna do that 80 times. Like, the customer's sitting right there, you know, in front of her. So that's when it comes to where she actually has to remember, you know, which relationship she has, which bank will get her approved and things like that. So I'm like, why aren't you guys using big data? Why aren't you guys using AI, artificial intelligence? And it was mind-boggling to me. So I actually set up a meeting with the lead engineer for the HoloLens team to talk about, you know, how can we actually automate this? Within like an hour of our conversation, she already had planned how to automate this stuff.
And so, first off, I kept up with you the entire time, but you talk very fast.
I know, I do that.
But it's amazing. I'm following you the entire time.
Me too.
But I guess in the manner that you explained it, then too, over how long of a time frame did this happen? By the time you were introduced to your friend and into the dealership, furthermore, in their operation, to these thoughts of now bringing in more advanced technology to automate these processes.
Well, when at first, you know, when we were, her and I were walking in Kirkland and she was telling me about the manual process, I thought that maybe she either didn't understand how to use technology or maybe they're not using the right vendors. So that's when I started doing my own research. I'm like, because I was trying to help her. And I'm like, well, let me do my own research. And that's when I started, the more and more I looked into it, I mean, a lot of the players in this space have been around for 20, 30 plus years. Mm. They're huge, giant companies. But their systems are antiquated. Their systems are, you know, legacy solutions. And so in order for them to innovate, they would literally have to strip everything down to the bones and restart from things from scratch, which is why, you know, for a startup company like us, it's easier because we're building things from ground zero. Uh-huh. You know, our competitors might have the huge customer base, but for them to migrate that, it's a nightmare. It's like, for example, HP, Hewlett Packard. My twin sister works at Hewlett Packard, and right now they're going through a massive project. And she was telling me about, imagine over the years, HP has acquired all these companies. By acquiring all these companies, they've also inherited all these legacy solutions. And now trying to migrate them, it's massive undertake. Right. Versus, you know, startup companies, we're coming in, we're building things from scratch using the latest technology.
Yeah, so that nimbleness is what's separating you from a behemoth like HP,
but,
yeah. Right?
But not only nimbleness, and again, I'm hoping that we're still going to be getting inside her head a little bit more. I mean, talk to me about now how you're taking some of your world experiences. I mean, what are you seeing? I won't ask you, for the sake of offending you, your age, but certainly, certainly you were very much in tune with social media.
Yes.
During your travels, is there something that you're also seeing about bringing your travels into, you know, 3-2-1 ignition?
Well, the thing about travels is you get exposure to a lot of different cultures. And that's one of my favorite parts about working at Microsoft. You know, when I started work my first day at Microsoft, it was orientation day. And there were about 100 other people who were with me in the room. And I looked around and 99% of people were not from America. They were from some other country. And you know, Microsoft is really huge on diversity and inclusion. And the thing about marketing, what I'm doing, it's really understanding behavioral science. It's understanding how people behave, understanding, having the customer obsession. I know it's like one of those buzzwords, everybody talks about it. But truly, if you put yourself in the universe of a consumer, day in a life of this person trying to accomplish XYZ, it's amazing what happens. And a lot of times, companies, they focus more about what's important for them from the business side, and they forget to think about a consumer. And so I love people. I love traveling. I love meeting people. I love communicating with people. And I love observing things. Like, I love sometimes just going to, you know, like in Barcelona, I remember we're sitting this really, really busy walk. And we had our chairs facing the street because I was just wanting to sit there and observe how people are communicating with each other, how they dress, how their body interactions. Like, to me, it's just amazing. I would
almost add to that too, the way that you're explaining it is that it's more like, let's look at the people first before they're even the customer,
yes.
Right? Let's look at the people. Let's look at their habits. Let's look at how they do things. And then now you can really start to implement those types of guided actions into the retail space.
Yeah, you know, it's actually amazing. When I started at Microsoft, I can't give out the numbers, but I had a massive goal for customer acquisition for Office 365. That year, I ended my first year at Microsoft, I doubled the number of customer acquisition goals and reduced their cost per acquisition. So usually the more you try to scale, you become less and less efficient. I was able to achieve both by doubling the customer acquisition and improving efficiency. And the way I did it, as crazy as it sounds, I went to our retention team and I said, why are people canceling? And I looked at the data and I figured out the reason, number one reason why people were canceling is because they didn't understand what they were buying. And then I started obsessing, well, how do I increase clarity and reduce friction? And that obsession, I completed 60 tests that year, over 60 tests.
Wait, what are the tests for?
Landing page tests, website testing, okay. Like understanding how are people coming to the website? What are they seeing? How do I improve clarity? How do I make them, help them understand what's included in Office 365? When was the last time you guys tried buying Office 365 product? Remember back in the days you would get like a CD.
I was just gonna say a CD.
And now it's a subscription, but there's three pricing plans. And people are confused, what is the difference between each of those pricing plans? And the same thing applies for automotive. Like, as you guys probably heard, JD Power says average consumer takes 4 months to buy a car. And number one feedback that I get when I talk to consumers, millennials and Gen Z, says they're not clear about what are their options. You know, what are the financing options? What are their trade-in options? What cars are available? They don't understand. The more somebody doesn't understand, the less likely they are to make a purchase decision. Or if they do make a purchase decision, they're more, less likely to spend a lot of money. They're gonna, you know, try to, you know, cut down. So if you obsess about understanding what's causing anxiety for a consumer, if you obsess over what's causing their uncertainty, because we're humans, people, they don't want to feel anxiety, they don't want to make a bad decision. So if you first put a customer first and think about how do you increase their confidence in them making a decision, it's amazing what happens to sales.
Two things about that. I know I'm a human and you're a human. Dennis is still,
you he's know, a robot.
I'm still not 100% sure.
That's a compliment.
Because all of the things that he's able to do, it's pretty amazing. I have a question related to the way you laid out your history was great. Now I understand where you've come from and the fact that you have this friend and you saw how antiquated the automotive industry in particular sounds like. So used cars in particular. And then did you see, were you like, aha, look at this opportunity that I could conquer? But I have a question. There's a question there. Other than there's a huge opportunity in automotive, why automotive? What is it about the industry that keeps you in this industry? And what do you think the future is both for you and the industry?
So it's actually a really excellent question. So one of the main reasons why I went into automotive is I actually felt like dealerships were being taken advantage of.
Okay. All right.
Wow,
that's pretty...
You're definitely the minority flipping the script in that sense.
Yeah. Never heard that
Please
before.
Go on,
that's
yes.
good.
Well, what I've noticed is a lot of people in automotive industry who start their marketing agencies, who start, you know, website companies, they've always been in the automotive. And...
Here. Yeah, case in point.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
And so when I was helping this friend with her marketing, I've noticed a lot of really terrible things that the agency was doing. They were, I would consider that even to maybe a certain extent, even stealing from them. They would, as an example, this dealership was spending $50,000 a month in advertising, which is a pretty good budget for a used car dealership.
Yeah, wow, yes. For sure, that's a lot.
Yeah,
you see me. I know for you, Rudy, this is you're very baffled by that number, but that is not like such a
yeah,
foreign
there's
monthly
actually,
spend
spend
number
more
for
than that.
For dealership.
Crazy,
but for a used car dealership, I mean, it's not like, you know, they're huge Chevrolet or you know GMC, but it was still a decent budget.
And that's so much money. I mean, how many cars do you got to get off the lot in order to cover? I mean, it's just crazy.
That'll be for another topic.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, so here's what I noticed. So they were spending about $50,000 a month. And when I came to them, I'm like, okay, show me how you guys are spending that budget, what channels you're investing, you know, how are you, what's your media strategy? And this agency was spending $4,000 in Pandora ads, about $5,000 in YouTube ads, but they were only spending about $1,000 in Google ads, less than $1,000. I'm like, why is that? And this agency, and by the way, this agency wasn't tracking leads. They were just sending her reports with impressions. And I'm like, where's your Google Analytics? Let me see your goal tracking. Their goal tracking was not even set up.
Okay.
And when I got on the call with this agency, by the way, hated me because they were like, who is this lineman? What does she know about automotive? She comes from Microsoft. You know, automotive is very different. Our goal is to help you increase your brand awareness. I'm like, that's amazing. Yes, you should be increasing your brand awareness, but you're not going to increase your brand awareness by spending $4,000 on Pandora ads. Because
that's so
true. Brand awareness... is about reach and frequency.
She's pretty sharp.
Yeah, no, sorry, I hate every Pandora ad. So that in fact, you're going to ruin your brand with me if you're on a Pandora ad.
That's interesting. I didn't think of it that way. I was thinking from purely numbers because, you know, digital marketing is all about numbers. Like, everything to me is about numbers. I'm a total numbers nerd. Like, I would be on a Saturday night at a coffee shop playing with spreadsheets and pivot tables and sending my employees notes saying, I'm in heaven, you guys.
I've said this. I don't understand numbers. And
Rudy,
that's probably where I am in my life. I'm against math.
Rudy,
so,
what?
Yes, do I need
Rudy. And you know me. I'm on the opposite side of that spectrum. I love math.
I know, me too.
I think
you
know
why? You can't BS math. That's the problem, right? Math is what it is. You can't.
Exactly. That is why I love it.
That's why I hate
it. There's no gray lines.
I live and die in the gray, and as do many lawyers.
Rudy.
Many lawyers live and die.
That's
in
a lawyer in you.
Rudy, I'm falling in love.
You're in
here.
Heaven?
I'm falling in love.
He's
here.
In heaven.
Talking about math, talking about numbers.
Shoot me in the head.
Excel spreadsheets, pivot tables,
and functions.
Oh my God.
You're going to be massively successful.
Wait, okay.
Thank you.
Oh, look. Okay, so. All right, so I don't mean to cut you off so early about, you know, essentially what the effect you see that you would have in automotive.
Yes.
But maybe let's fast forward to Rudy's second question, and you understand all this stuff. I believe you have actually the proper mindset about this. I firmly believe that.
Thank you.
I mean, again, like part of the reason why we're out here is to look for these quote-unquote data science enthusiasts.
And have, thank God, praise the Lord.
You found the.
We found one.
Capital T, capital H, capital E.
So, but now let's talk about Rudy's second question is, what do you see as the future of automotive retail then?
So, I mean, the future, as everybody keeps talking about it, is allowing people to be able to buy cars online. But what people are missing is, you know, I see all these companies, like digital retailing is such a huge buzzword right now, just like everybody, you know, keeps talking about AI. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is first user experience. Yes, companies are building, you know, checkout process, but they're completely neglecting to oversee what is the mobile experience. Like, first of all, millennials and Gen Zs are the most mobile generation in history. Over 95% of them have a smartphone. Mm. Who doesn't have a smartphone? And we all know people start their search for a car on a mobile device. And if the mobile experience is horrible, who cares if you have a checkout process? Nobody's gonna be able to find a checkout process. So they're completely missing the most fundamental thing first is to make it easier for people to research cars, to get to the information they need and get out of their way, like what Amazon says. Mm. And it's done. Mm. They're completely missing the whole point. So my goal number one with 321 Ignition is first, of course, to improve the mobile experience. And I'm seeing incredible results right now. We launched the first dealership in Renton. It's called Sound National Lending. It's a used car dealership. Sound National Lending.
Okay.
The guy who owns Rich Snyder, he owns like 14 other dealerships. And so we started with this dealership as a pilot. We launched on May 26th. So in the first 2 months, not only, of course, did the traffic and everything increase, which is amazing, but my favorite metric that you guys are going to be blown away by, average time spent on a site, guess
Wait,
how much?
Okay, hold on. So average time spent on a site,
yes.
Rudy. Whenever you visit a website, your IP is going to be logged in specifically Google Analytics, and it'll say, okay, you've spent X, or this IP user has spent X amount of time on a website. Usually that number, and you can go to it, maybe not an Amazon, but go to any news website or go to e-commerce site, usually the number 2-3 minutes long. Not very much. Again, people get in, get out. Okay, so my fare on the characterization of 2-3 minutes is like usually an industry average.
Yep. Guess what ours is?
Rudy, you have a guess?
No, because I...
Millennials staying on a website, on a mobile website.
For used cars?
For used cars for...
Yeah.
10 minutes.
Over 12 minutes.
That's That's to, impressive. To
that, yeah, you're really capturing them. They're,
I mean, what
they're,
do you,
they're searching and they're looking for whatever they're looking
are
for.
Are the pictures of the cars like pictures of Instagram and cars? Like, is that why they're staying on so long?
Girls with bikinis on it next to it.
Okay.
So here's
I'll buy.
Here's the crazy thing. What we're actually seeing, this is the part where I feel like a lot of dealerships are completely missing the ball on it, is we see the most people first find this dealership on a mobile device. And they come on a mobile and they'll spend an average of 6 minutes on a mobile device. Because, and by the way, before it used to be like 1 or 2 minutes. Mm. You were right on those numbers. Then, because the mobile experience is so great, they go back to the desktop and they're spending an average 16 minutes. So
say that again, they go where?
On a desktop.
Okay.
So first they start with mobile, okay. They'll spend about 5 to 6 minutes. Then they go back to their computers, probably when they're at work or at home, and then they're spending additional 16 minutes on it. The blended is around 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But what's amazing is what I also noticed in Google Analytics, this dealership traffic used to be mobile higher number of visitors sessions and lower on desktop. Now it flipped. It's actually more people are go. So the number of users is about the same, but
right,
the more
right.
sessions are in desktop. So what this is telling me is that if you don't have a good mobile experience, people are not going to go back to your website, especially on desktop, where they're spending more time and doing their more serious research.
So when's he going to have you do all 14?
We're actually talking about it right now.
Because those are some amazing numbers that you've already produced very quickly.
Well, you know what's another amazing thing? So we were talking about brand awareness earlier. Here's another metric that will blow your mind away. And keep in mind, I used to do brand campaigns for ING Direct, for ShareBuilder product. I used to do TV commercials, billboard ads, and things like that. So I used to spend like about $3 million per month just to increase their brand awareness for ShareBuilder product, which is the brokerage product. And it increased their brand awareness after like 3 months, spending $3 million by 1 point. With this dealership, because people are spending an average 12 minutes on the site, I was looking at their traffic, where the traffic's coming from, and they're not doing any advertising. So they only have organic and they only have, you know, direct. So when I look at their overall traffic went up by like 280 something percent because of technical SEO and everything we've done for them, but we are doing zero content SEO. So like we're not doing zero on-site right now. It's just purely technical SEO. So here's my favorite part. When I look at their organic versus direct traffic, direct meaning somebody actually typed in soundnationallending.com, and I pulled this as 2 years worth of history. Prior to us, I'm not sure if I should say those numbers. Prior to us, let's say hypothetically, I'm not gonna reveal the real numbers.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
I just wanna give you a relative number.
Sure, right.
So hypothetically, let's say their average number of users who were going and typing soundnationallending.com was about 300, 400 visitors per month.
Correct.
Now it's 1,777.
Hold on. No advertising.
But, no on-site SEO.
Did you tell the world or tell Renton or tell anybody in Washington, hey, we have this new mobile site? That wasn't told?
By the disconnect.
It doesn't make sense.
I know.
It's just shocking.
It makes sense. That's an amazing thing. If you put customer first, it's amazing what happens. Just by improving their mobile experience, and to your earlier question, Dennis, about the, you know, traveling overseas, guess what? If people overseas probably use mobile devices even more, especially the, you know, Latinos, Hispanic, and guess what? A lot of, especially like in Tacoma, Renton, you know, Washington State, like this used car dealership I used to help, majority of the clientele is Hispanic. An amazing thing to me is, here's the most amazing thing to me, there are competitors who build websites. You will go to a desktop, you will see a Spanish translation. You go to mobile, that Spanish translation disappears. Mm-hmm, but their customer base is on mobile.
That's great. So did it spread word of mouth? Did another user tell another user, "Hey, check out this new"? I mean, how did people know? How did people know to get the that this mobile
to go back
site?
To the dealership?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I don't think it's people spreading the word. I see what's happening in Google Search Console that we set up is I could see what keywords people are searching and what they're typing.
Okay.
And what I'm seeing, so this dealership, they specialized in used cars. A lot of times people who are, you know, have really bad credit history. And so I would see they would show up in keywords now that they weren't used to show up. They were now showing up for like 900 new keywords that never showed up before. Hmm. For keywords like, dealership near me with bad credit, get pre-approved for car loan with bad credit. So they're showing up for those non-branded organic keywords. But because the mobile experience is so great, they keep coming back to the site as they're doing their car research process. Yeah. Because
this is now, okay, yeah. Everything's coming together now. Okay,
nobody wakes up on it. So like one of the things I learned when I used to work at House Values, and I was like employee number 50 before I went IPO and then now Zillow. But one of the things that I learned with real estate is nobody wakes up one day and says, today I'm gonna buy a house. They usually wake up and you know start thinking about buying a house. And that's when we used to run TV commercials that said, thinking about selling your house, want to know what it's worth, find out for free at housevalues.com. We were the first ones to start doing it back then. And we knew that if we would put the real estate agent first with that consumer who's thinking about selling a house, and the agent does a good job providing CMA market analysis, telling them, hey, if you remodel your kitchen, you could get more money for it, blah, blah, blah. They're more likely than when they're ready to sell a house to come list with that agent. Same concept applies to automotive industry. Mm-hmm. Nobody wakes up and says, today I'm going to go buy a BMW, or today I'm going to go buy, you know, a new Chevrolet. They usually start doing the research earlier, especially for high-end cars like Porsches. You know, it's something that people, you know, have been thinking about or they've been saving for until, you know, they get to a certain level. And so the key thing is, what is your dealership website doing to engage with those people during their car shopping research phase? How are you keeping those people on the side?
Do you look at then these very, you know, a bifurcated process of developing websites or an online experience so that you are developing almost a separate mobile, not only just website, but almost like app versus the actual desktop?
It is actually two different experiences.
Okay.
That's why the mobile first is called, is because it's not responsive. It doesn't just take your desktop experience and resize it. It's actually two different experiences.
So give me an idea of if I were to look, and again, I'm sorry, I probably should have looked into this, which dealership, but like, you know, give me an example of what it looks like on mobile and what am I going to expect versus the desktop.
So let's say, for example, if you're in a search results page, SRP page. Mm-hmm. On a desktop, you will see a filter on your left-hand side, mm-hmm. and you will see cars, you know, mm-hmm. line up. Mm-hmm. Desktop, it's, you know, usually most dealerships are, you know, not a bad experience. But when you come on a mobile and you have the small little screen, 100% of car dealership websites, you could only see one car at a time per screen.
Yes.
You have to keep scrolling to see more.
Yes.
And you can also, you have to click on each car to go to the vehicle detail page to see more photos.
Yes.
With ours, you could actually flip to see more photos. Everything, you could see two or two and a half cars per screen, just because the whole template just completely redesigned specifically for mobile. And when we were building this platform, you should have seen here the conversations I was having with my developers. They were literally freaking out on me. They were like, Lyman, do you know what that means? We're going to have to maintain two different websites, two different templates. Every time we add any features, anytime we need to make any updates, we have to double QA, double development, double design. I'm like, I don't care. We're doing it.
She said, yeah, God bless your developers, because they're actually doing two things at once. They're maintaining that, especially something with used cars. So I think, obviously, used cars get sold, so they need to take one on, take one off.
Well, that all happens automatically. That's an inventory feed.
Oh, that's great. I mean, yeah. I'm extremely impressed. But I have to ask again the question: why do you stay in automotive?
You know, to me, I love solving complicated problems. And this actually to me doesn't seem that complicated. I'm just baffled that nobody has done it. And so to me,
so it's the opportunity. So at the end of the day, which is great. I mean, having an opportunity is an excellent reason to have a company and stay with that company.
In this specific industry.
So you see there being amazing opportunity here. What are your thoughts? This is not completely unrelated, but like the transportation revolution that's happening in the world with the scooters and people talking about not using a car and, you know, more transit lines being built out. Like, as somebody who's in this space working for dealerships and doing all that type of stuff, what do you think of an effect that may have on this space?
So here's actually an interesting thing. I've been hearing that from the minute I started in this industry. That's not true. So I hear all the time, millennials are not buying cars, you know, because they don't like to own things, they like subscription models. That is not true. Based on my research, this is actually going out in the field and talking to millennials and Gen Zs. Here's what's happening. Seattle Times reporter actually wanted to interview me, and she's a Gen Z. Super smart woman, She graduated top of her class. She was number one student of the year award.
Wow.
And not because of the highest GPA or anything, because there's actually another girl who got that award for highest GPA. She used to work for CNN, like super wicked smart, super tech savvy woman. And she doesn't own a car. And the reason why she started interviewing me is because she had a horrible experience trying to buy a car. And so when she found out what we're doing, she reached out to us and wanted to interview me. She's like, you guys are exactly solving the problem I was dealing with. And so I asked her, I'm like, so I flipped the script and I'm like, okay, let me interview you. And I'm like, so why didn't you buy the car? She's like, I wanted to buy the car. I had the money. I walked into the dealership and she's like, and I felt like the dealerships were just trying to sell me a car. She's like, I wasn't informed. I didn't feel confident in making a purchase decision. The unique thing about millennials and Gen Zs, they're the most resourceful generation in history. They grew up with the internet. They grew up with Google and Bing. I should say Bing, because I always work for Microsoft.
That's so funny, actually. You say Bing as if like that very well actually could be a positive difference in millennials as opposed to, you know, baby boomers and Gen Z for us. It's like we don't really think so much of Bing.
Gen X, dude.
Gen X, sorry. 77. Gen X, yeah.
I hold strong onto my Gen X.
So the reason why she didn't buy the car is because, you know, she came into the dealership uninformed. And have you guys ever read a book called Leading at a Speed of Trust?
No, I haven't. I like the title.
Yeah, that book is amazing. I actually went through the whole training when I was at Capital One, and Stevie Covey, who wrote that book, you guys need to read that book. He really talks about leading speed of trust, how to lead teams and how to get things done faster, but it really applies to car dealerships, like tremendously, because what he talks about is there's this tax credit. When there's low trust, you're paying a high tax credit. When there's low trust, speed goes down, cost goes up. Yep. When there's high trust,
makes sense.
Speed goes up, cost goes down. So what dealerships are missing with millennials and Gen Zs is building trust with them. Mm-hmm. They're not like a typical consumer, you know, my grandma who would walk into the dealership and try to work out a deal. They want to come into the dealership. They're using smartphones to help improve their in-store experience.
Okay.
And so that's why the smartphones is so, why I'm so passionate about it. I love solving, you know, complicated problems, but I'm a data nerd. So I love like just looking at a Google Analytics, looking at Google search results and just like, wow, this is insane to me.
I love it. I do. I mean, I'm so not
she,
her.
Yeah,
and she's, it's so she, awesome to
she
see.
She lights up about this stuff. And
I know. I have a twinkle in my eye when I say that, don't I?
And it's almost like I can see she is like the nerd, you know, looking at her computer on all these numbers. I mean, she's getting excited. I mean, then she's just waiting to tell people.
And I call myself a nerd and a junkie of transportation and all kinds of things all the time. And I love that you are just being honest about what you love. It's great. Your passion is infectious.
No, thank you.
But I still hate math. I still hate it. I'm still against it.
I will convert you. I'll make you a believer.
Please help me. Please make me smarter. Nobody's been able to do that.
Well, Lyman, thank you very much for being on Wisco Weekly.
Of course. I
feel like we're cutting the conversation short, but hopefully there will be a part two and a part three soon.
Thank you for inviting me.
Appreciate it. How can people follow you, Lyman?
On Instagram, on LinkedIn. I mean, I'm a millennial, so I'm all over the place.
I love it. And listeners, I'll put her contact information on the episode page, so be sure you check that out. On behalf of Kelly Rudy and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastaravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsit, gambe, yamas, nastarovie, to the customer experience.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Miss Lyman Savvy. Be sure you do follow her on Instagram and LinkedIn, and you can find her information on the episode page. Let's get back to Peter's car buying story. Peter was absolutely set on purchasing a car on his first visit to a dealership. After he realized that the deal he wanted was simply not possible, Peter became more of an open book, fully disclosing his reasons for wanting the exact deal. Turns out that Peter was awarded $30,000 from his insurance company, and that's all the money he was willing to spend on a new car. After hours of back and forth, the retailer and Peter were still $2,500 away from making a deal. So how did Peter still end up driving home in a new Prius and was able to pocket $10,000? The sales professional started asking more questions on Peter's driving habits. Turns out, Peter usually drives cars for 3 to 4 years and only drives about 12,000 miles per year. I'm sure you see where this is going. However, Peter was absolutely adamant about not leasing a car. After all, there was no need to lease if he had $30,000 cash to spend. So the sales professional introduced him to a one-pay lease. A one-pay lease is where you make all the payments up front. The advantages of this is that you don't have to make any payments, and the finance rate is the absolute lowest. When you finance or lease a car, there is a cost of borrowing money. And that cost usually is in the form of an interest rate if you are financing, or a money factor when you are leasing. To understand the differences between the two, be sure you sign up on WiscoWeeklyPod.com to get access to our educational resources explaining the difference between a money factor and an interest rate. And so the sales professional informed him that he could drive the Prius home, drive it for the next 3 years and accumulate 36,000 miles, and only pay one time $20,000. And that's how Peter saved $10,000 for himself. Shocked but thrilled, Peter was a happy, happy customer. Thanks for listening to this episode of Wisco Weekly. Tune in next week and subscribe wherever you're listening to this show.